the Keystone Sports Network.
Hello and welcome to the obligatory Keystone crossover show. I'm Jim Galante along with Chris Buccanani. We have a combination of the obligatory Penn State podcast and the Keystone Sports Network. This is where we take a look at a little bit different aspect of the Penn State football world that we may not have gotten to in our respective podcasts. We're also alternating the show between our two sites. If you're listening to us, that means you found us on the Keystone Sports Network. Next week, we'll be on the obligatory podcast. Next week, you got to go over to Chris's area. Chris, welcome to the show. And why don't you let our listeners know where they can find the show next week?
Absolutely. Thanks, Jim. Best advice I can give you is just start typing obligatory into whatever podcast search engine you use. We will pop right up. We'll be the first hit. And if you go to statecollege.com or obligatorypsu.com, you can find the times and stations for the obligatory PSU pregame show.
Fantastic. And Chris, you did some remarkable research talking about Penn State's rushing game or lack thereof this season, which we're going to get to in a minute. But there's immediate Penn State news that I want to make sure that we hit upon, and that is congratulations to Brent Pry. He has taken the head coaching job at Virginia Tech, and Penn State's going to be without their defensive coordinator. Your thoughts?
Well, not a huge surprise to me, Jim, because Brent's name has been thrown around for head coaching vacancies, none of which has the prestige of Virginia Tech, potentially. But after the season Penn State's defense just had, the tenure he has had at a successful Big Ten program, and the fact that he has been in the mix as somebody who, you know, schools and athletic directors have looked at as a potential head coaching candidate, doesn't really surprise me at all, especially with the just insane amount of head coaching turnover all over the country right now.
It was perfect timing for him between Penn State's a very good defense this year. That helps out. He didn't go to a lower level school, Virginia Tech, very good job. And he's doing it at a time when the top end of the coaching world, the USC's and the LSU's, they're really elevating that pay also. I haven't seen anything on the contract and what kind of dollars we're talking about, but that all adds up to a good deal for him, I'm sure. Before we get to your rushing statistics and the numbers there, Chris, who's the next Penn State defensive coordinator?
Well, all right, I'm going to speak this into existence, Jim. Now, I want to make it clear. This is not what I'm predicting. This is my Christmas wish, okay? My Christmas wish for defensive coordinator at Penn State is Gary Patterson, the former head coach of the TCU Horned Frogs. Now, I don't think that's going to happen for a variety of reasons, but if we are really serious about competing with the elite programs in college football, I am of the opinion, Jim, that elite coordinator hires are orders of magnitude more important than facilities. I would much rather see Penn State spend millions on top-tier coordinators, and I believe that they should. And I love the idea of bringing in someone who is a skilled tactician, great at teaching technique, has previous experience. I would love an experienced coordinator. Someone with head coach experience to me is even better. And a guy who brings the brand and the gravitas of a Gary Patterson, if you're able to bring him in, have the confidence and the wherewithal to attract a name like that, I think that immediately sets a marker down and says, we got Mike Yurcich on the offensive side of the ball. We'll talk about the rushing output this year. And a guy like Gary Patterson, another name I like is Lovie Smith. I think that sends a signal to the rest of the conference and the country that Penn State's not messing around. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's more likely that we either promote from within, maybe Terry Smith gets elevated, or look at somebody like an Elijah Robinson, defensive line coach at Texas A&M. I've seen Sean Spencer's name as a possibility to return. I like both of those guys. I would be fine with either one of them, frankly, but I am just such a big believer that any top-tier program, but especially one that's coached by a guy like James Franklin who takes the CEO, I touch my hands on everything approach, the more you can bring in previous coordinator slash head coaching experience to those two top jobs, the better. I really think Joe Moorhead, having been a head coach, albeit at the FCS level before he came to Penn State, was a huge benefit to the program and to James.
And the fact that James just went through this whole negotiations where we have to be the best at everything and everywhere, it'll be interesting to see what direction he goes. I do like your idea. Let's get someone who has that name value and has been there, done it before. So that will be a very interesting hire. All right, let's go to your research, Chris. And you sent me some great information, and I'll let you hit into some of the details of it. But we as fans, just watching this team this year, you could tell the rushing offense was bad. But with your research, it's historically bad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's frustrating. We should probably issue a trigger warning for all the numbers we were about to give the audience, just putting Penn State's 2021 rushing attack in context. So clearly, anemic rushing attack, huge culprit in what was an underwhelming final result in a season where you had at least a competent passing game and a top 10 defense. So what I did was I looked back at key season stats in the run game dating back to the turn of the century, starting with that disappointing 5-7 campaign in 2000 that began the so-called dark years, where we had four losing seasons in 5 years. So I am going to give you the top line numbers from Penn State this year and then put them in context. So Penn State's rushing game this year averaged 34 rushing attempts per game, 106 yards on the ground, and 3.1 yards per attempt, with a rushing TD average of 0.9 scores on the ground per game. So fewer than one rushing touchdown per game over the 12 games that they have played so far. So now let me put that into, let me put that into context for you. Penn State has never averaged fewer rushing attempts per game than this year's 34.1 or rushing touchdowns per game this year's 0.9. Only in the infamously bad sanctions hobbled season of 2014 did Penn State match the 48% of its total offensive plays coming via the run. And 2014's 2.9 yards per attempt and 101.9 yards per game was the only time over the last two decades that the run game averaged worse output than this year's 3.1 and 106.3. And again, a reminder, that team was pulling back up defensive tackles from the other side to the other side of the ball just so we could have five scholarship players on the offensive line. With such an ineffective run game as we had this year, the overall offensive output suffered as well. It matches up with some of the worst teams of the last 20 years. The team's 26.2 points per game, and they finished 82nd in FBS, in offensive points per game. That tied for the fifth worst since 2000 in terms of national ranking. Now, nine other teams finished averaging fewer points per game than 2021, including all four of Joe's losing seasons and James Franklin's first 2 years post-sanctions. Amazingly, by the way, there were two others in that group of nine that were nine-win Paterno campaigns, so 2006 and 2011. So even in the new century, Jim, we were still winning the old school way every once in a while here in Happy Valley. And just final note here on our individual leading rusher per season. Only the terrible, truly terrible 2001 and 2003 seasons, along with last year's nine-game COVID-shortened fake season, saw Penn State's leading rusher finish with fewer yards than Kevon Lee's 495 this year. And he only exceeded his total from last year by less than 60 yards, but with three more games played. He also finished the year with two rushing touchdowns, which is the fewest ever for a rushing leader since 2000. And just as a note, Noah Kane did have four touchdowns this year, but that would only tie him with Kevon Lee's total from last year and place him one score ahead of Michael Robinson, who is doing like triple duty as a backup quarterback, sometime wide receiver, and kind of sort of running back in 2003. So this year's offense, in terms of its run game output, only finds its peers among the most infamously terrible campaigns of the last 20 years, all of which have either the qualifier of being part of that dark years, four losing seasons in 5 years, where the talent was just bad, or the 2 year stretch where the sanctions hit us the hardest.
there's a lot of numbers, a lot to digest here, but a couple things really stick out to me. First of all, 3.1 yards per attempt.
It's gross.
That's unforgivable, just unimaginable that it's that bad. The other thing that stuck out to me, again, as you pointed out, Noah Cain had 4 touchdowns, Kevon Lee 2 rushing touchdowns. But in 2002, Larry Johnson himself had 20, which is an incredible number.
Yeah, but I mean, just to be fair, if you add the two of them together, so we take their 6 rushing touchdowns, right? Like, even that would be almost at the bottom of the barrel. And again, you're looking at terrible, terrible seasons. Akeel Lynch had 4 in, 2014, right? Eric McCoo had 5 in 2000. So just nobody thinks fondly back on the offenses from these years. And this was a season when, you know, supposedly all the pieces were there. You had had normal recruiting, in fact, pretty good recruiting classes that were averaging over a 5-year stretch coming into this year, 14th in the nation, according to 24/7. And you just brought in a new offensive coordinator. And yet, nevertheless, for whatever the reason, this was just one of the all-time busts in terms of your run game output. And I'll cop to being one of the folks who was waving the flag for this being potentially the deepest running back room in the last 30 years at Penn State. And that's pretty embarrassing to have touted it potentially as the best and have it end up as the worst. Embarrassing for Penn State football and embarrassing for us for being fooled.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. Going into the season, you weren't alone. I'm not sure anybody thought there was no Saquon Barkley or even Miles Sanders among this group, but we thought they were deep, 5 deep. You know, Noah Cain, healthy. We remember what he did in 2019. We remember the promise of Kevon Lee from last year. But we had 5 opportunities at running back, and we also thought this offensive line was going to be pretty good. Remember the bookend tackles, Caden Wallace, Rashid Walker, some experience in the middle. Where exactly did it go wrong, Chris?
Boy, how much time do we have left, Jim? And look, I will cop to not being nearly as much the film buff as like a T. Frank or a Coach Caduti. I do try to study that stuff when I get a chance. I do appreciate those guys breaking it down. I remember early in the season, both those guys, who really I think are the elite brand leaders in the space right now in terms of doing film breakdown in Penn State media, at least, they were both talking about the dramatic changes in scheme from what Kirk Ciarrocca was doing last year to what Mike Yurcich was doing this year and what he was requiring the tight ends to do, specifically those young guys in terms of run blocking. Very, very different from what they were required of by Kirk Ciarrocca last year, and that they were maybe just not adjusting to it. But look, over the course of the season, I think there's blame to go around, and certainly much of it does fall on the interior of the offensive line. There's no question about it. But at the end of the day, Jim, I mean, again, you and I have the stats right in front of us, which is a benefit that the listeners do not. But if you've got longtime Penn State football fans out there in the audience, they'll remember names like Eric McCoo and Akeel Lynch. They'll remember Michael Robinson, one of the greatest leaders in program history, who had a very nice season as the starting quarterback in 2005, having to play all over the field like I talked about. The only times we were even in the same ballpark as the output we had this year, we had guys who were just totally outmatched and you know, not among the greatest to play those positions in program history. Again, Michael Robinson was a quarterback, for God's sakes, and he was the leading rusher in 2003, playing as a running back. So, like, a lot of the blame to me just does need to fall on the tailbacks. Not being able to break tackles, no burst, no vision. All of those things combined with maybe some struggles adapting to the new scheme and the age-old story of lackluster offensive line play. Blame to go around, but I do think you, at the end of the day, you have to put the onus on the guys who are actually carrying the football. like 3.1 yards per carry. Come on.
You know, what's interesting, if I had to peg it on one group, I would say the offensive line. And my reason for going that way, Chris, is...
Certainly fair.
There were potentially five different running backs there, okay? So I know there's five offensive linemen, but it's one set of offensive linemen, five different running backs. And if it were one running back that was ineffective, I'd say, okay, it's him. Bring in the other guy. But what it was, every single one of them struggled. So I point at the offensive line, but I've been listening to T. Frank through the year, and his answer has been scarily similar to what James Franklin, that catch-all answer. It's a little bit of everything. One down, it's the offensive line. Then it's the tight end missing a block. Then it's the running back perhaps missing the hole or not accelerating through it, not being able to break a tackle. The thing is, there's an issue from top to bottom everywhere with this running game. And the effect it has on the whole team, it drags it all down. You had a defense that was good enough to be a top 10 team, top 5 team. You had some wonderful receivers led by Jahan Dotson. A lot of the elements were in place for this team. It should not have been 7-5. And I think you're exactly right by putting the blame on this running game. It just dragged this team down.
Well, there's no question that ball control and the ability to pick up short yardage downs cost us the Michigan State game. But over the course of the season, the cumulative effect of the inability to run the ball and our coaches knowing we can't run the ball and opposing coaches knowing that we can't run the ball, I think throws off your offensive production overall. Like, it's telling, right, that you go back and you look at the 22 seasons. Now, James mentioned in his post-game press conference that the season's not over yet. So, yes, I understand we could potentially slightly improve these numbers compared to the 21 seasons before them with a bowl game. That's not going to make anything look any more attractive, frankly. But, you know, you look at the numbers overall and the fact that this was one of only two times that we dropped below a minimum of 50-50 run-pass balance. That starts to add up, right? Again, especially when your pass protection ain't anything to write home about either.
Exactly. And I think where it definitely hits home is on those 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1, you should be retaining possession of the ball.
Yeah.
And remember when we had Will Levis come in and be that 4th-and-1 guy? And I believe it was about 17 or 18 times in a row he converted on that. Think how much different it was this season with the inability to convert on that. How much difference did that make, Chris?
For sure. And again, just for way of comparison, Penn State last year averaged almost 11 more rushing attempts per game. And yards per carry was not great. It was 3.9, which was right up there with the worst in the 22-year period I looked at here. 57% of the runs or plays were run calls, and we averaged 174 yards per game. But again, some of that was done with smoke and mirrors. There's a lot of Sean Clifford running in there, a lot of Will Levis as a functional fullback. They've really got to take a long, hard look at this in the offseason. And with a coaching transition happening in South Bend, I think that is a great spot, both through the recruiting trail and the transfer portal, to look at a place in our recruiting footprint that has done very well, bringing in offensive linemen who Penn State has been in the mix for in the recruiting process, and maybe try to get a quick upgrade there.
Would all like to see it. One last note from me. You said last year that 3.9 yards per carry is not cause for celebration, but the math is that's still 25% better than what we saw this year. All right, Chris, that is it for our show today. Thank you all for listening. Be sure you join us next week on the obligatory Keystone Crossover Show.
Keystone Sports Network.